that was an invalid fair catch at all. And I think, here's the thing, I don't think anybody from Minnesota would be mad today if they didn't call that at all, right? It just took away a phenomenal play from a guy, Cooper DeJean, and just, you know, an All-American punt returner, just makes a play out of nothing. And I did not, this, and none of Minnesota stops to do a fair catch.
I know.
Nobody stops.
To me, it's like the quarterback slide now. You know, that to me is so annoying that they can go down. All of a sudden, they slide. You can't hit them. The first play
and
of the game.
You have to, like, pull off your hip. Yeah. Like, even if you're, like, launching.
The very first time, I would tell my defense, the first time he slides, you knock the living crap out of him. Take your penalty. And then guess
what? Unless it's targeting and get kicked out of the game. But yes.
But hit him as hard as you can, and he'll think about it the rest of the game.
Sure.
All right, guys. We got to get out. Jay, the sponsors one more time.
Yeah, Iroquois Federal, our title sponsor. Hit them up for all your loans. IPG Insurance. That's with Kyle Lewis. Kyle at IPGINS.com. And, of course, Long Branch Steakhouse for
good
all your
stuff.
Steakhouse needs. Don't forget the fried pickles.
Great. Thanks, as always, Jay, enjoy your bye week. Are you back?
I'm back next week.
Oh,
guys.
Sweet.
We can't go a week without you.
Guys,
listen, we got sponsors to make sure they get value. Okay,
we'll
number
talk
one.
World Series number and two. Illinois basketball.
Yeah. Oh, wow, my favorite. Illinois basketball, guys.
Oh. What'd you think of the Ottawa scrimmage?
Ottawa scrimmage. Let's go. Here's the deal, guys. I'm just glad. I know you guys just cannot wait to talk about it probably.
Oh,
you know.
No, I'm always like indifferent. I'm just like, I just love the battleground that happens every year between you and Pipes.
I just love like the in-depth analysis. Like, I still remember Pipes like 3 years ago. Guys, I stayed after practice and Curbelo came out and shot shots to get better. Like, this guy's going to be the guy, right? It's just like, you know what? The basketball love affair around here. I mean, this needs to be a football town at some point. Let's
it's go. Like a tug of war, and I'm the guy in the middle, like judging if it's going to go over the water or not.
Yeah, you're pretty good. You're pretty good at fence setting. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I'd be on the end. I'd just sit down. Good luck moving me.
Yep.
All right, guys. Let's go.
Thank you, Jay. On the other side of this break, we'll have Luke Altmyer join us as he always does. Your Illini quarterback, if you want to weigh in, you can. 217-359-2255 on the U of I Atlanta Link text line. I got to let you know. This is ESPN Radio, WSJK, Tuscola, Champaign, Urbana. Your home for the St. Louis Cardinals, as our guy Stevie J likes to say, and also The Drive, of course.
Yeah.
We'll be back after this break. It is The Drive.
Great motivation. Oh, man. So the fifth, sixth grade version of you, when the teacher says, what do you want to be? What do you say?
That's an interesting question. The fifth grade version of me and somewhat still what goes on inside me is to be so incredibly nervous when I was asked a question in class that I could hardly answer. I was the kid where remember on the first day of class where you'd have to say here?
Yeah, you couldn't do that.
I was thinking, I'd be like, and then you're like, is Adam Silver here? And I'd be like, here? Like, I honestly, I,
that is you?
Talk to my therapist.
Really?
You know, yeah, I guess it's what's internalized in me, but I was an incredibly shy kid. I mean, I did things that, I mean, I participated, but it felt like it took a lot out of me. Like, as simple as saying here in class, and being, I never volunteered, hardly ever raised my hand, and I would answer if called on. So I guess if you know, if a teacher had said, asked me a direct question, I would have answered it, but very nervously. I mean, I think I was thought of as a shy kid. I was pretty reserved.
Yeah.
What exactly is this question?
Well, once you got here out and your teacher says, Adam, you know, some kids say fireman or doctor or lawyer. Did you have?
Well, I haven't told Andy Bernstein this, but who's the NBA official photographer, is that for a long time I would say I wanted to be a photographer.
Really?
I was fascinated with that. I mean, back in, you know, in the old days, little film Kodak camera.
Yeah.
And, you know, but then you didn't know if you actually caught the picture till you brought it to the drugstore.
Yeah, different than the phone.
A week later, the work. I found out it was all black on the film. But I wanted to be a photographer. That was for a while. My dad was a lawyer.
Yeah.
At some point along the way, I think it was more just I wanted to be like my dad.
Yeah.
And I think to me then saying, well, you know, he seemed to me to be a great success story. There's sort of family lore around my dad, you know, sort of had made it from a tough background. I fought in World War II, gone to law school on the GI Bill. And so I modeled myself in many ways after him, that standpoint. And so probably, maybe, clearly not as early as fifth, sixth grade, but I'd say by the time I was in high school, if somebody had asked me, I'd say my plan was to go to law school. And I ended up going to law school.
What about your dad? Because I've heard you reference him before. You list off veteran, came up from, it sounds like, a tough place, not entitled. Was it his success that endeared you, or was he actually, when you're sitting at home at dinner, were you sitting there or this is the guy I want to be as a person, or because he achieved?
I think all of those things. I mean, and especially as I've gotten older and look back on my childhood, it gets, I assume, as with most people, a bit more complicated.
Right.
My parents split when I was around, it's interesting you said fifth, sixth grade. I think I was in fourth grade. My parents split. And I said, I think that was, I was the youngest child at home. That was, I think, particularly hard on me on the time. And in those days, and maybe other families were different. So this would have been, you know, the early 70s, I guess, that my parents didn't have sort of a formal agreement in terms of when I would see my dad. I lived in the suburbs of New York City. He lived in New York. It was more to sort of catch him when you can, and take the train into New York and see my dad. But and even though it's not as if he was around that much more when I was younger, but I missed his presence. But he was a quiet man. He wasn't one who sat me down and sort of gave me the lessons of life. And I, you know, it was more just someone who I emulated, I think, as much he was my dad. It's funny. It's like, I look back on it and sometimes I should reflect on it more because it seemed almost a bit automatic. Like, he's my dad, so I want to be like him.
But now asking, cause it's kind of like the success.
Yeah,
sure. But I was asking, like,
I think I felt.
Going way back.
Throwbacks. And if you can't notice, we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants today.
Yeah, so we had something
go down with the system.
We had a system go down. And
so we kind of got to makeshift this thing. And I'm the DJ as well as the board operator and a co-host. So
Eye of the Tiger came up.
It did. It was a song request from Diane Deuce.
As we wait for Luke Altmaier to call us, efforting Luke on this wonderful.
It's a good jam. I was
say
that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is. What year was this?
Kyle?
And
Kyle, you going to contribute today?
I have no clue what year it was. So.
Oh, I forget. I always have a.
You're going to make me left hand type this?
I'll do it.
I got it.
What year?
Who can get it first?
1982.
Okay.
Wow, Lon wins. Old Rocky.
In an upset.
Rocky beating Mr. T, I think, in 82.
Yeah, sorry to the text line. We got people saying, show's off. What are we listening to? Apologies. We got to manually queue up Fox. It's all inside baseball. You don't care about. But we're back.
Oh, wow.
We're back. And while we wait for Luke Altmaier, what a day of baseball we got today.
Wow.
Fellas. We got Game 6 of the NLCS is probably underway right now.
Oh,
I think it started at 4.
Since you're not doing anything over there,
I got everything.
Having 700 things you've got to do, can you also flip on the baseball?
Sure, why not? I've been waiting to do something.
Piper is over here doing reads. We have no commercials, so he has to input those.
I did the legal ID.
The legal ID you did physically. I mean, there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes that go pretty smooth when the system is running. I'll put it that way to everybody out there listening. There are a lot of things that run smooth, but when they don't, all of a sudden it's a little bit different, and Derek is handling it like a pro today, which is awesome. So, you're not going to watch Naked and Afraid?
No.
Okay. All right. I guess we'll watch this Arizona Phillies game. All right. Yeah. Let's.
I
do
agree
that.
With Maxwell on the text line. By the way, we don't have to read it, but I agree.
Maxwell says, "Hey, whatever Stevie's paying Piper isn't enough to babysit Lon and run the whole show." I want to know why Kyle isn't back there taking the brunt.
Well, then we'd
yeah,
have a problem.
Yeah, you couldn't
with Jay
because
here.
Jay. That's oh, you got lucky. You got lucky, Kyle.
That's my excuse. So. Aaron Nola just struck out first batter of the game. That being Corbin Carroll, a filthy running two seam. That pitch is beautiful, by the way. Mm. That Greg Maddux.
Yes.
Really, I don't know. I wouldn't say made famous because I'm sure there were guys throwing running two seamers before him, but he perfected it. If
yes.
not, and
right
Nola's been. Unbelievable this postseason
when that ball is coming because we are used to a curveball. In other words, if a guy is a righty, we're used to a ball going from the right to left, and whenever that running two seam comes in where it's going left to right,
so tough,
it freaks you out, right? And it's just, you know, I was left-handed, so I would see that on occasion and it's like I don't know what to do with that. I mean, because it looks like it's going to plunk me on the shin and then it just flies, you know, like Greg Maddux then would just barely get it right over that inside, you know. Well, he would be 3 inches outside, but he'd get the call. So it's just, you're just not used to that. You are, if you're a lefty and you're facing a lefty, then you're used to that movement because it's then the curve's going away from you. But when you're facing a righty who's throwing from all the way over here on a right-handed side, almost at you,
yeah.
And then, across towards you, and then the ball somehow comes at you and still goes back. You're like, no, that's not even right. You just struck the next guy out too. So,
or if you're even if you're a righty and he throws it like in the other batter's box and it just comes back over the outside corner. Was it?
Did you take Nola's up the over on the strikeouts because he's always struck out too?
Oh man, we should have made a bet for this game.
How'd you do betting wise yesterday?
Not great.
I didn't either.
No. Pretty poor, actually.
I got
a little confident the Bills would win
in
New England.
Oh, that only ruined two of my parlays.
They apparently built two new huge high-rises in Vegas because of that.
Why is there always the one? I'm telling you, if you've ever wondered about Vegas, there's always one game every week that is the upset game. Now,
that
this
kills
week,
all the parlays.
Yep, this week you had about four of them. It seemed like, but there's always the one game that you no-brainer put in with, like, because I normally do like a noon parlay, then I do like a late game parlay, and then I do automatic, like, and I usually win that one. You know, it's the Eagles. I mean, it doesn't pay you much, but it basically pays for the parlays you're placing, right? You're kind of hedging your own bet. And then I kind of do the one that's like a little bit out of there. Like I had the Bears winning. I had the Colts winning. So
you were ballsy enough to pick
the
Bears. Wow.
I did.
Wow.
At home. Yeah. With Hoyer, I mean, going against I wasn't too confident in him.
It was terrible.
So I kind of do one that has some upsets. But then in that one, I'll still put in like the automatics. So like I did like two or three, like the Bears, the Colts, and I don't remember the other game. And then I put like the automatic, like Buffalo's going to win. So I'll just put that, I'll add that to this parlay as well. And then when they lost, it was like, all across, like there goes that parlay. Well, there goes that parlay.
Unfortunately, because let's say Buffalo takes care of business. They go up three late in the game. And unfortunately, right. Mac Jones and the Patriots drive all the way down the field on what's thought to be a pretty good Bills defense.
Mm.
That Colts pick looked brilliant almost all day long, but they ultimately lost it at the very, very end as well.
That was unreal.
You almost had a really nice parlay.
I know.
Telling
you.
The Bears was a call that I wouldn't have made, and then the Colts obviously as well. I mean, coming off a week where the Browns look like unquestionably the best defense in football, they gave up like 38 points to the Colts.
That was one of the strangest games. There were more points in the first like 10 minutes of that game than a game I've seen in a long time. It was constant turnovers, just weird plays happening, and all of a sudden it's like 28-21 and you're in like the second quarter and it's like, wait a minute, do these teams even play defense? Mm-hmm. And like you said, and then you look at Baltimore and what they did to Detroit.
Wow.
Holy smoke.
Wow.
I mean, that was I was not expecting that. And I think that's a little bit of an outlier, right? I know Baltimore's good, but there's no way Baltimore's that good, and there's no way Detroit is that bad.
Correct. So, yeah, you have some of those. I think middle of the NFL season, things start to get a little bit weird. You have some weird type of performances in terms of scores. Like Baltimore just was playing in London and didn't look all that good offensively, especially.
Yep.
Some questions about Lamar's passing game. Then he goes.
No, they lost to the Colts.
Yeah.
Earlier this year.
Yeah, they did.
And barely beat the Texans, although the Texans have played pretty well.
And then they light up Detroit, who looks like a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
I would say to get there, especially in the NFC. But one thing I did bring up last week, that's to like pat myself on the back, but I think Detroit's defense was a little untested because the games that they – their biggest wins, they played the Chiefs without Travis Kelce. They played Green Bay, who now Green Bay looks like
– ooh.
Oh, boy. And then
good
beating
win,
Tampa in Tampa. So, yeah, how about Jordan Love, Packers fans, for everybody that was parading him around after 2 weeks?
Can we put our boy on there at the end? I want to ask him about
his
Dolphins.
Yeah, speaking of officials and anger and F-bombs.
Who, by the way, the Dolphins, I think the opponents they've played have a combined, like, what is it, 8-22 record. Are they for real or not?
Jury's still out on that.
Okay.
I will say I'm still waiting for a flag to be thrown on Philadelphia today at 4:16 p.m. There's still no flags.
No defensive flags.
Nope. You stick your fingers in a face mask on a 4th-and-3, no flag. You could wrap defensive linemen's heads around the whole game, no flag.
They didn't have a penalty the entire game.
Zero.
Wow.
Zero. But at the same time, their defense did do a nice job shutting down this Dolphin offense. And, yeah, Dolphins are 0-2 against the two playoff teams they played.
See, that bothers me, though, with the officiating, with the penalties. Because, let's be honest, a holding call is probably one that could be called on three different guys every play. Correct?
Yep.
Maybe not three. Let's say two of the five linemen hold every play. Now, it might be two different ones the next snap, but you pretty much have two. Now, I do like the idea that they let most of them go. I think it's the egregious ones that, you know, a guy's falling down on the ground right in front of you. But that gets a little out of hand to think that they could go an entire game and not call a holding call. The other call that I hate worse than you hate targeting, Derek, is the defensive hold that automatically leads to a first down. I think, to me, that is absolute. And it happened in the Ohio State-Penn State game. There's a hit on the Ohio State quarterback, fumble, Penn State picks it up, takes it the distance for a touchdown. Oh, wait, there's a flag. We have holding on number 4, Penn State. So not only do they not fumble and give up the touchdown, they get an automatic first down. That's the old Michigan-Ohio State flag that Jay always talked about. And to me, that call, like for instance, when it happened with Johnny Newton and the targeting, when he hits the Wisconsin quarterback and the ball's out, now, what's the one easy way to just put a nice little bow on that play is have a deep official just throw a flag for defensive holding. Because guess what? You're not watching that. Nobody's watching that. You're watching the ball. You're not watching the defensive holding. And there's probably a chance that a receiver is running by a defender, whether that be a tight end with a linebacker, a slot receiver with a corner, a receiver on the out running by a corner. There's probably a pretty good chance that there is physical contact made. So now the official is going to say, well, watch the replay right there. Well, come on.
Well, yeah, you could even do illegal contact.
Exactly.
If he's 8 yards downfield and you put a hand on him, you can call it whenever you want, even though it happens on probably every pass play.
It's like ball on the ground. Football. Ball on the ground. Somebody throw a flag. I don't know. I guess
it does make you think about certain teams, doesn't it?
It totally does.
I'll say this to Kyle, though.
No penalties.
Wait for it. When you have Tyreek Hill, and you have Tua, and you have Jalen Waddle, and you have Mike McDaniel.
I'll say this, Mike McDaniel is goofy enough that I think he might be on some of that Bob Marley stuff. He says some weird things, dude.
He went off on Twitter. Did you see that?
No.
You see his,
I need to follow him.
He created a thread of videos of the missed calls.
Oh, he did.
And that was a fake account.
Was it really?
No, that's not him.
No, it's got to be him.
Oh.
That's not him.
Oh, you just ruined my day.
It's like a knockoff of. It's a very big account on Twitter.
Is it not verified?
They might have paid for Twitter, whoever this is, but it's like a big knockoff Dolphin fan.
Because now you can just pay, right?
Ruined my day.
Says Mike. I mean, if he was posting a thread on Twitter,
it'd be awesome.
Well, but he'd also be losing quite a bit of money.
Is Pipes verified on Twitter?
Like, I'm not paying for that.
Because now when I see somebody verified, I look at him weird. Like, why? Why are you verified? Why are you paying for that?
Well,
I'm kidding, by the way. Unless you were verified before it came out that you had pay to be verified.
Yeah, I was at one time, then I changed my handle, and then I didn't decide to send another picture of my driver's license to Twitter so that they could verify me again. And
goodness.
Yeah. Anyways, Kyle, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, you're going to be all right.
I will say, though, to Lon's point, like, please just beat a playoff team.
Yeah.
It's been like a year since they've beat a playoff team. So it is – they do need to prove it a little bit. I think they're – since McDaniel took over, they're 0-6 against playoff teams and road games. And so I would like to see them. They got the Chiefs in Germany in 2 weeks. That'd be a nice one to get.
Can I throw out a statement you thought you'd never hear? I wonder if that win saved Bill Belichick's job.
Might be right. I mean,
why are we playing in Germany?
I don't know.
Why are we going to have a team in London? Maybe.
Kyle and I were talking about this last week.
Why are we exploring this? Do we not make enough money? Are they this money hungry?
Yes.
That they want to go put a team in London? The London Werewolves. Like, can you imagine if they enter and they're in the Central with the Bears? Or what are you? You're the North or whatever the hell they are. And it's the Bears, Packers, Vikings, Lions, and the Wolves. Please, no. Then we'll have a team out of Mexico that's going to play in the West. We'll have a team out of Cuba that'll play in the AFC South. We'll find, I don't know.
I don't want to steal Kyle's thunder here, but he brought up a good point on why it would be dumb. One of the reasons why it could be dumb to put a team in London. Free agency?
Yeah, I mean, who's signing to play in London, right?
But they'll come up with something. Well, you have to. I mean, yeah, I don't know.
I forget who it was going off on the text line about the draft. Then make Caleb Williams go to London and play.
Oh, yeah, that's Bill. Bill?
Yeah, yeah.
But it is true. Like, why would you want to – that's no knock on London. Yeah. I've never been. I'm sure it's a beautiful place, and I'm sure it's great, but it's not my home, right? I mean, the United States is where I'm from, so I don't want to go play in London. An entire season and spend, 9 months of the year there, I would assume. I don't know what they're – yeah, no.
But even the travel, it's one thing to kind of, like, they stack it to where a lot of the times – not as often. I think when they first started playing London games, it was like an auto buy the next week. It's not that case anymore because, Baltimore was just playing there. They played this week. But for the most part, it's probably easier to adjust, for a one-off for a team – to play one game in London, then just kind of, come back and adjust your time clock, your schedule. But for a team to be based out of there and have to play
it's crazy.
8 across the pond games through a season, and imagine the London team having to fly to Seattle.
Exactly.
And then fly back home to play the Chiefs the next week.
No, it makes no sense. And
kind of dumb.
I mean, to me, it's just dumb. And I don't know what the time difference between us and London is 7 hours, I think. I don't know what it is with Germany. I assume it'd be close to the same. So I just don't get why all of a sudden, if my team was fighting for a playoff spot and all of a sudden it's like, hey, you're playing a game in London, and then it messes them all up and the next week they return home and lose to the Carolina Panthers, then I'm going to be a little bit heated. By the way, the Bears have the number one pick and the third pick
with you guys,
with the Cardinals sandwiched right in between.
What a race. What a race. You know how much pain I'm in currently? Now, don't get me wrong. Having the number one and number three pick is a great spot to be in.
Yes, it is.
Long term, I still am not super thrilled about having to sit here and do the Caleb Williams thing versus Justin Fields. And, yes, Fields is hurt and has made some plays this year that have lost confidence for me in him and a lot of other Bears fans. But here's the big talking points. You don't want to be out of it in October. But
no.
The Bears are, your team is, and we kind of knew that. At least you did. I thought we'd be a feisty team that might be 500 or upside of maybe trying to compete for a playoff spot. But the two big storylines for the Bears right now are the draft picks. And should we start Tyson Bagent or Justin Fields next week in the case that Fields is healthy? And I am in a nightmare.
I think Bagent,
that's just stupid.
Looks pretty good.
He looked decent.
No,
but it was
I'm
the
kidding.
Raiders. Come
I,
on.
I know. I know.
Raiders. Yeah, they beat the Packers and Jordan Love. But.
I don't know. It's just, it's, I don't, every one of my teams stinks right now.
Yeah.
That's why I needed you, Illinois.
Ah, boy.
I needed you because my, I mean, the Blues are off to a decent start, I guess, but, you know, the Cardinal baseball team, worst record since 90.
Can we talk about that last night?
What's that?
Adolis Garcia hits a grand slam, and he's homered in, what, three straight games for Texas?
We are
now going to play in game seven, which is going to be really, really interesting. Scherzer not great in his first start.
Right.
He's going to start again tonight. Christian Javier on the other side. Another guy that the Cardinals traded for cash consider – not another guy, but another guy that the Cardinals traded. Rosarena went to Tampa, had a like a record-breaking home run stretch in one postseason. Traded Garcia to Texas for cash considerations. He's going nuts, and they're both all-stars, probably going to turn into perennial all-stars. And the Cardinals are sitting there with Dylan Carlson and Lars Nootbaar and Tyler O'Neill and guys. They flip-flop on between who's untradeable. No, now we'll trade him, but
exactly.
Actually nobody wants him now.
Right. I keep waiting for Carson Kelly to show up for the Diamondbacks. I don't even think he's there anymore. And hit some three-run homer to win this series. Yeah. I'll be like, oh, I didn't know Carson Kelly was still in baseball. You remember him?
I will say some of the guys they've traded, like Luke Weaver got traded, and then he's just gotten. He's been a punching bag everywhere he's pitched. Austin Gomber stinks.
Is Carson Kelly still with the.
I don't know.
Carson Kelly. I see him in a Detroit. Yeah, he's with the Tigers now. Uh-huh. And here's the funny part. Through all of that, the Cardinals, I still don't know who should play outfield for them besides Jordan Walker. They don't think Newt is the center fielder. You know what we're going to do? We're going to go out and get Harrison Bader.
Hey, okay.
For all the fans.
Perfect.
Hey, what's up with Kelly just stinking every time he comes out now for the Diamondbacks?
Merrill Kelly?
Yeah.
He's had a pretty good year.
I know he has, but like in the postseason, hadn't he been just a – he's been down in the first inning like every time, or did he have
is
a –
that right?
Maybe he had a good
– I know he got roughed up the last time he pitched against the Phillies, but
he may have
pretty much everybody in starting in Philadelphia has done that. I think it's a surprise that we're even having a game six in Philly. This thing looked like it was going to be over.
I agree.
Two comeback wins for the D-backs. And let's talk a little bit about the Astros-Rangers series.
Mm.
Who are you guys feeling tonight in that one? I'm guessing it's going to be Houston because of the pitching matchup.
Of course.
This was a fully healthy and right Max Scherzer, and you're throwing him in a game seven, I think that's the perfect scenario.
Yes.
That's why you traded for Max Scherzer for the Rangers. Unfortunately, I mean, he got beat up in that first start against Houston, and that's his one outing like the last month. So
I'm going Rangers.
Are you really?
I'm going Rangers.
I hope so. I hope to see it.
I do too. I'm going to go Rangers. I feel like this has been – there, and I know Arizona's done this in the National League side, but I feel like this is just Texas year to get to a World Series. But I think the Phillies win it all.
Mm, yeah, I'm with you on that. Kyle, what do you think?
Yeah, I really want the Rangers to win, but I'm going to have to take the Astros at home. Scherzer looked terrible in his first outing back, and Houston's just relentless. Like, even in Game 5, Altuve, ninth inning, three-run home.
I know.
As it looks like the Rangers are going to take control of the series. I feel like it's going to be a tight game tonight late, and there's going to be one big swing by Altuve or Bregman or somebody, Alvarez.
I think Scherzer.
And the Astros are going to get it done.
Digs deep. That Chris Carpenter stuff. I think
he's got it in him. I mean, if
Roger Clemens used to do that.
It wouldn't shock me if he threw a gem tonight.
It wouldn't either for me. I mean, I feel like Kershaw would do that, right when you kind of were.
Well, Kershaw in the postseason.
Well, I know. But like
Bumgarner.
Roger Clemens would do it. Madison Bumgarner, perfect. Those guys just, it's almost like they have another gear that they can dig deep to get to.
Curt Schilling with the bloody sock.
Yeah, baby. The ketchup on that sock.
Before he had a Twitter account. I'd play the pun if we had it, but I don't. Kyle, you got to manually go, yeah.
I'm feeling the Rangers.
Okay.
They've never won a World Series. How about, well, Arizona won one. I kind of want Texas to win a World Series this year. Why not? After we kind of what we did to them in 11, that was pretty cruel. That was really cruel.
Yeah.
Can I go back real quick to one thing? What was your initial thought after the Illinois game Saturday? When did you go to the game?
I didn't know.
Okay. Kyle, did you go to the game?
I did.
What were your guys' thoughts when that ended? I was absolutely ready to put my fist through a wall.
I mean, it was just a huge emotional letdown. It wasn't the problem is the very core of me is like, that's not surprising.
I know.
That's,
and I think I'm mad about that it's not surprising. I'm mad that even though the targeting call and all that, even though it just seems like I tweeted out, I'm like, I just want one time for us to apologize about officiating. Mm. Like, yeah, you know what? We kind of did hose you. Illinois did kind of get the call there. Sorry. That never happens to Illinois. And I was kind of mad just at the idea that Illinois would be outscored 18-0 in the fourth quarter. I mean, you were up 21-7 in that game and everything going on your side. And I thought, they're going to win this game like last year against Wisconsin. Like, they're going to end up winning this thing 28-10. And then it just all...
Wisconsin didn't look good for three quarters of that game. And that's not to take away from Illinois, because they were the clearly better football team for the first three quarters. It was frustrating that drive right before halftime that Illinois allowed Wisconsin to score. It was like a 3rd and 10, and they allow a 30-yard unguarded pass over the middle, which was they didn't have – Braden Locke was doing nothing. No. Offensively, they were like stuck in the mud for the most part for the first half. All of a sudden, you got that big play. Then they are able to get, I think it was then Braylon Allen in the end zone before halftime. So that was a little frustrating. But then the third quarter, you're able to put another touchdown on the board. But I've already voiced my frustration on the targeting, because I've been mad about that rule, and I still think it's mind-boggling.
It is.
There are a lot of like calls in different sports that are very triggering or get people fired up, like the block charge, the flagrant foul, whatever you want to talk about. Blocking the plate now in baseball type of stuff. There's nothing more, just doesn't make any type of sense that this is an automatic ejection. And the other part is, like, when I hear, are you guys with me when they bring on a rules expert, when they bring on a former referee, 95% of those guys provide no value.
No.
I hate when they're even on. They're telling you obvious stuff. Well, here, this is what they're looking for in this situation. We know what they're looking for. Just tell us what you think. Now, to his credit, Dean Blandino said that by the book, this is a targeting. Yep. I think that's what they're going to call. And I understand that.
That was kind of a cool thing at first. And now I'm like, yeah, I don't need it for every game.
I don't like it at all.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
This is just, it's a dumb rule. It was not like overly vicious by Johnny Newton. I understand why they threw the flag when they did, but to see him crushed like that, it was unfortunate. But kind of the bigger picture on Illinois is just, I wasn't super surprised. It was disappointing.
Yep.
And I mean, I'm here because I cover him, but I'm just fully ready for basketball.
Wouldn't it just be amazing, though, if Johnny Newton would have come in and not led with his helmet, and the ball is fumbled, and Illinois recovers, and they go down and score, and it's 28-7. That is a script that in a matter of a second could have shifted.
Yeah.
Just, but it never does. Like, it just, like a play like that almost, it's almost supposed to happen. And that's the frustrating part. It's like you said, it's like, I'm just sitting here waiting for the shoe to fall. Somebody homered, Tommy Pham.
Tommy Pham.
Oh, perfect. I couldn't have played in any better to our Cardinal.
When I checked out of baseball for about 2 months, and then I tuned back in for the postseason, I look at Arizona's lineup. I'm like, Tommy Pham is hitting third for this Arizona Diamondbacks team, and he's actually had a good postseason. Like,
oh, yeah.
Where the heck did this come from?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But
of course, he had some other issues with the Cardinals.
Well, yeah. But it was frustrating. And, yeah, I was just kind of – my brother went to the game. He was blowing up the group text between me and my best friend. He's like, I'm done with this team. I'm never going. Oh. Like, people get mad about the turnout in the crowd, and why would people spend money when they're just going to get let down so many times? And I do think Illinois, shouldn't focus. I get frustrated sometimes when fans overly focus on a call or the officials, because there was so much after ejection
that
Illinois could have done to make sure that Wisconsin doesn't win the game, and they don't. And I think the secondary, as I've been talking about, I've been banging the drum for it since the offseason. I think that they're not good enough. They need to upgrade that talent. The Tyler Strain play was really baffled
by that.
And I think that's a failure on the staff.
I still, Kyle, I'll let you go. I still have a lot of passion because I sat there until the final play, and I put the hood, there goes another one. I put the hood over my head and just sat there and just shook my head, just going, why? What are we doing here? Why do I do this to myself every year? Why? And then my phone starts blowing up in our group text going, well, I guess we don't have to go into the next two. And it's just really, really frustrating. It's just really frustrating. So, Kyle, what about you?
Aaron Nola is getting teed off.
He is. He better give us a discount, the Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, for me.
Oh, we need him bad. We need him bad. Go ahead, Kyle.
For me, it was one of those games where you just kind of left stunned. Like, you just – to me, I see where Pipes is going. You shouldn't be surprised that happened. At the same time, I was pretty surprised that it happened in this particular game because it felt like Illinois was in firm control entering the fourth quarter.
Big time.
21-7. Wisconsin couldn't do anything offensively. Newton was dominating. I was already starting to, in my head, picture like, all right, we're 4-4.
Yeah.
What's the Iowa score? Do I start watching the Big Ten West scoreboard now?
See, I didn't go that far. I wasn't even looking at like the Iowa score.
I'm just saying the thoughts started to cross my mind. Yeah. It seemed like they were in such firm control of the game, and then it seemed like in the blink of an eye, Wisconsin marches down, scores twice, an offensive lineman catches the game winning touchdown.
Just a boot.
And you walk out of there and you're like, really? Did that really just happen? And
it's the most helpless feeling.
Yep.
When that play happened with the offensive lineman catching that, I just sat there, and like there were a couple people in my, I probably said a few choice words, too many, and then I just kind of looked around and it's just this helpless feeling. I'm like, nothing's changing. Like, that is a catch, that is a touchdown. Illinois is going to lose again, and there's nothing you can do about it. And as much as you want to will them to win a game, and as much as they should have won that game, there you sat in just an absolute, just, I was in a bad place. I'm like, I don't know why I do this. I mean, the passion's still there. I still give a lot of time and effort to Illinois football. I give more to Illinois football than I do basketball, which makes no sense because I never played football. And I give a lot of time to Illinois basketball. I don't want you to think I don't. But it's, I don't know.
I think one of the things about it, like if Illinois came out and got dominated and it just showed that Maryland was a fluke performance or a one-off, or that's not who this team was, like this is a bad football team, they're not going to a bowl game, and that was solidified from very early in the game, it would have been disappointing. I mean, it was homecoming, there was a good turnout in the crowd, but I think it would have been maybe, you'd be down in the dumps today, but I don't think you would have felt like you had your heart ripped out. I think that's
people are
feeling today, because they were able to put 2 weeks together, not obviously full four quarters, but this team showed, like Jay talked about, the offensive line, they were able to run the football, the defense, until the two like 80-yard drives down the stretch of the game, which again, I don't want to give too many qualifiers. Well, if this didn't happen, like I'm Tim Beckman out there, but if you take these 18 plays out of the game, Illinois wins by four touchdowns. But like that's, I think, what is really painful about it is that Bielema and his staff have obviously been able to figure some things out.
I agree.
The players showed up to play in a number of circumstances, Luke Altmyer being one of them. I know he doesn't sound like he's going to join us right now, at least today, but point still stands. That's where it's like, okay, Illinois came to play. They look like the better team than Wisconsin. And then I also thought about this. In the last 30 years, Illinois still has only beaten Wisconsin back-to-back years or back-to-back times and chances. Once, that would have been twice. Like, that never happens. The chance to beat Wisconsin again, we talked about it late in the week, how much Illinois is just annoying Wisconsin right now.
Yeah.
They could go out, Purdue's going to say, to just catch that Illinois.
Oh, don't bring up that two thing.
What's that?
Don't. Kyle knows what the two thing is.
What is that?
Well, we can't win two games in March.
Oh, the two. Yeah.
Can't have two back-to-back seasons. Don't bring the two thing up. Not to me.
Okay.
But you're – no, but
yeah,
you're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. To beat Wisconsin again and to go out and tell people, hey, you know, in a lot of years – you know, offensive linemen in the suburbs have gotten an offer from Wisconsin and hasn't even been a recruitment. They're like, yeah, I'm going to go play for Wisconsin and we're going to run the football, whatever. And then Brett Bielema's like, hey, you know, I took that program to some Big Ten championships and went to the Rose Bowl. And now I'm down in Illinois and we're beating them.
Yep.
But that's
– well, and it'd be like if you're a Wisconsin fan now and every year you're winning 8+, and then you have this one-off year where, like, you're Illinois this year where you've lost a couple of tough games and everything. As a fan, you're sitting there going, well, that really stunk, man.
Yeah.
Like, that game was a tough – I mean, to anybody else, that was a good game to watch probably.
Sure.
So, you know, if by all standards you've won three straight years going into – if Illinois had won 7+ games the last 3 years going into this season, and then they fall to Nebraska and they look horrible, and then you turn around and – you know, Penn State gets you, and somehow you beat Maryland. Then all of a sudden you lose this one to Wisconsin. You're like, gosh, that was tough. But, you know, sometimes – but it's just every freaking year almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
14 out of 15 years, that's what happens. And that's not a woe is me. That's just fact. Mm-hmm. And that sucks. So
well, that's a good way to leave it. We're going to let you get out of here early.
Yes, I'm going to go to a golf banquet.
Watch some golf. Oh, right. They're not actually playing golf
oh,
today.
No. This is for my kid to get, you know, to be say, hey, you were the 28th best golfer on this team. Congratulations, Andrew, on your will to show up to practice.
Okay. Since it's STM, does everybody get a green jacket?
Well, that is a good point. I don't know. Maybe he gets another pin for his
Letterman jacket.
Yeah. That's all. That's what it's all about.
That should be pretty decorated because he's been a pretty accomplished
athlete.
No,
in his defense, he did golf just to have some fun. And, you know, he's only golfed for like.
I'm not golfing to be good.
He literally had golfed for like 1 month of his life. And then he's like, Dad, I'm going to go off with the golf team. I'm like, oh. I mean, that's not something you pick up in a day.
No.
But he had fun. He had fun. He got to play a lot of really nice courses, and now I get to go watch, you know, everybody else get, wait, that's awesome. And then, oh, and Andrew Tay, here's your pen. Parents probably think it's all fun.
I know you're messing
It's all
around.
Fun and games.
If you want to win, you can. 217-359-2255 on the U of I Atlanta Link text line. When we come back, Kyle and I talk some hoops because there was an exhibition game.
Yeah.
On Friday night, want to get his thoughts, and I'll weigh in as well about what we saw from Illinois. First chance to
see
the
squad. Yeah, I want to hear what you have to say. Yeah.
Kyle and I's betting line almost – I mean, it was a good line that we set. It was 55.5.
They were at 54 before that, like, buzzer beater three.
Guys are, like, watching, like, going
Now, we didn't put – we took the action on it.
Okay.
Most people – I told you on Friday, people had bet Illinois minus 55.5, so we raised it a little bit. Our sportsbook made money on Ottawa plus 55.5.
I could call in and act like I'm Luke Altmaier if you want. I want to hear you talk basketball.
But I will tell you this segment brought to you by Dogtown Heating, Air, and Plumbing, your home's best friend, First Federal Savings Bank, local and trusted, Crossroads Contractor Supply, the right tools when you need it, Brian Hansen at State Farm Insurance, visit brianismyguy.com, and Carpenters Local 243. Let's talk some basketball when we return. Talk to Lon tomorrow. Stick with us. It's The Drive.
Frask International in Urbana is a legacy founded in 1958 by aviation pioneer Rudy Frasca with a mission of improving safety in the skies. Would you like to make a difference in your job? Frasca is looking for an accountant, a CNC machinist, manufacturing and electrical engineer, and customer service support. Positions for software, aeronautical, mechanical engineer, and machine shop finisher are also available. Positions include an extraordinary benefits package. As an equal opportunity employer, you can learn more at Frasca.com/careers.
Illini fans, take the opportunity to head down to Game Day Spirits Green Street location, shop their awesome selection of Fighting Illini merchandise. While you're there, shop some of their awesome buy one, get one free t-shirt designs, as well as their Nike section and so much more. With new styles coming in daily, there's sure to be something for every Illini fan. Shop them at the corner of 6th and Green in Campus Town. Game Day Spirit, where Illini fans shop.
And we're all boss went out, I always told him to be careful. And that was the last time I got to see him.
Because someone didn't slow down and move over. Ross had on a bright orange shirt with reflective stripes the night he was killed.
He always had that smile. He just lit up the room when he came in.
Slow down and move over when you see flashing lights. Everybody is somebody somebody.
When you see lights flashing, use caution passing. Let's all go home safe tonight.
Like every bank, there's a time every day when we stop making loans. But at Iroquois Federal, we never stop making a difference. Thanks to an amazing team of employees who give back to their local communities all over Central Illinois. From hospital boards and local school programs to Kiwanis and the United Way, Iroquois Federal employees donated more than 1,000 volunteer hours last year. And we'll do it again next year, because the only thing we like more than making a loan is making a difference. Iroquois Federal, still friendly, still local, still here. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Every year on November 11th, the United States of America proudly celebrates Veterans Day. And at Muhammad Christian Church, we are very grateful for the men and the women who protect and preserve our freedom. And we recognize all veterans and salute our armed forces every day of the year. And this year, allow us to make those days special as we present the Muhammad Christian Church 18th Annual Living Flag. And you are cordially invited to join us as we are celebrating life, liberty, and the freedom of worship with our award-winning Living Flag celebration. This year, we are presenting our Living Flag on Friday, November 3rd at 7 p.m., Saturday, November 4th at 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock, and our finale, Sunday, November 5th at 5 p.m. And in our lobby after each performance, as you greet and thank our veterans and our active military, we will be serving dessert and refreshments. Muhammad Christian Church, 908 North Lake of the Woods Road, across from the Lake of the Woods Golf Course. And for more information, please visit MuhammadChristian.org.
Hey John, remember when Dick Van Dyke had their one day only New Year's Day sale?
And people looked forward to it all year long.
Well, between ice storms, that must-see College Bowl game, and travel plans.
And a terrible headache from the night before.
Yeah, well, that 6-day sale does end today.
Not much time left, but plenty of value.
Including the big brands like GE, Frigidaire, Electrolux, Speed Queen, and Bosch. Price like you'll never see again for another 12 months.
Washers and dryers starting at $469.99. Ranges starting at $579.99. Most of the appliances they offer are backed by their free 10-year protection plan.
So drive carefully, set the DVR, bring the family.
And knock back a pot of coffee if you need to.
Because that 6-day sale does end today at Dick Van Dyke.
This is Dennis Regan, chairman of Dick Van Dyke Appliance World. Today is the final day of savings on everything. Your best New Year's sale deal is waiting for you today. Wow!
Dick Van Dyke Appliance World. When you buy from us, you get the whole store.
Back on the drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Derek Piper, Kyle Tosk. Kyle, you know about that song? Space Jam, Fly Like an Eagle?
Yeah. Space Jam, no doubt. My favorite movie as a kid.
Oh, there you go. See, we got an age gap, but we still synergize. I like that. On that note, Space Jam, let's talk some basketball. Illinois, as we mentioned before the break, I'm sure everybody knows, but 116-65 against Ottawa University in the first exhibition game of the season. We're now less than a week from Illinois and Kansas. Can't wait for that. We'll talk more about that throughout the week and get a Kansas guest back on, and also just kind of break down what we're hoping to see, what we're expecting out of that one. Sunday, the Maui Strong relief matchup. That'll be 5 p.m. at the State Farm Center. But when you're playing an NAIA school, the competition wasn't great as we expected. There's only so much you can really take away from that one, but there were some bright spots for Illinois. Let's hit on what we saw. What's the biggest thing that stood out to you, Kyle, when you were you at the game on Friday night?
I wasn't at it, but I did watch.
You were watching. What'd you think? What was the biggest thing you took away from that one?
It looked like a pretty fluid, connected team right out of the gate, which I feel like almost thinking back to last year, like we talked about it at the end of last week, they won against Quincy in their first exhibition game by 35. They mm-hmm. were losing in the first half. It was a really clunky game for them where you could tell, oh boy, there's going to be some kinks to work out here with this new group. Didn't really feel like that in this one. It felt like a pretty connected team. I loved what I saw from Damask. I thought that was like the standout performer of the game. You expected Terrence and Coleman and even Luke to do what they did, but Damask, first time seeing him play, he's a veteran. He's one of those guys. I can tell Underwood is going to adore him. Mm-hmm. He'll be on the court all the time because he's not going to be in the wrong spot. He's really good passer. I mean, he had 6 assists, and they ran some offense through him, which was pretty interesting to see. And, yeah, I mean, it looked like a team. It looked a lot prettier on the offensive end than some of these past, especially last year, these lower-level games have looked. And, again, you should beat this team by 51. That's not really the big takeaway. But I thought 116 points they got, buckets whenever they wanted. They obviously aren't running much offense because they're not trying to show anything, but I thought it the chemistry was there for a team that did play a lot of new guys, and that's what I like to see.
No, yeah, I agree with that for sure. You talk about starting off on a good foot, and I mean, come out and make, I think, their first 6 shots at the very least. You had a pair of Luke Goody threes within the first 5 minutes. You also hit a nice baseline jumper. Marcus Damask at a corner three. Shannon went to the rim. And all of a sudden, I mean, it was 12-2 right off the bat, and Illinois just kept building from there. And kind of on that note, like at the end of the game, you look and you see 14 for 42 from three. You hope they don't take 42 threes in a game. You imagine that's not going to happen again. It's an exhibition game. And a lot of those were in the second half. But 33% from deep, still a team that, you know, is going to have some guys that you don't want taking a ton of threes. But then someone like Damask, you're fine with. Goody ends up going 3 for 10. He missed, had a couple of rim out there in the second half. But let's talk about the starting lineup itself, because it surprised me. I think it surprised a lot of people. I thought, and I've said it since the offseason, I thought that it was no surprise to me that Ty Rogers, Terrence Shannon, Coleman Hawkins, and Marcus Damask were out there. But I assumed it'd be Quincy Guerrier at the four. It was actually pairing together Marcus Damask and Luke Goody, who was someone that in the Kansas scrimmage last year was a starter. He's a starter in this one. And conceptually, I don't know why I didn't think of that as a potential option. I guess the fact of kind of Damask and Goody being a little interchangeable within, you know, maybe the second unit, Goody comes in and he's that shooter, because you need to have – one of those in a lineup at you know, any given time, because this team has some other guys who can't space the floor. But the idea, and Brad talked about it a little bit after the game, of putting the most shooting possible around Ty Rogers, I think that allows you to have a point guard that's not a scoring threat, but it provides that floor spacing for him to be able to get in the lane and then kick it out. And Goody's a shooter. Damask can shoot it, obviously. When he's hot, Shannon can do it. Coleman showed some good stuff in the pick and pop. So I liked that lineup. I do wonder, as you push forward and some other matchups, like athletically with Damask and Goody on the wing /4, how does that play out? Because I think Guerrier gives you a little bit more athleticism, a little bit more of that, just that strength on the inside for whoever's guarding the four out of that. But offensively, I liked it a lot. I actually thought that Goody and Damask played off each other pretty well. Damask pulling in an offensive rebound at one point, kicking it to Goody for a three. Goody finding Damask on a skip pass to the corner to hit him there for the three. So I liked how those guys played together, and I think that was a productive lineup, obviously.
Yeah, it is funny because we didn't – talking through all the lineup possibilities, that's never one that came up, it seemed like, from anyone, not just from you or from other,
I know.
From anyone. That wasn't a lineup that was being thought of. But I like it. I mean, I think it could work. I do agree with you. If you're playing a bigger four, I get a little concerned that
like if you're playing Dante Scott,
yep,
is I'm assuming Damask is guarding him,
mm-hmm.
and he had been a four and even maybe guard some fives in the Missouri Valley. But one of the big narratives around Damask that Underwood's hit on is like, yeah, he's dropped 18 pounds or whatever. He's tried to trim up to guard on the wing. So that's a situation where I might wonder, okay, is this the best defensive lineup? And just in general, you know, Damask and Goody aren't the most athletic of guys. They're very smart, heady players. I thought Damask gave great effort, like offensive glass, chasing down loose balls. And then, yeah, offensively, it does give you shooting, and I definitely like that dynamic of it.
I even think to this Kansas game, I think they're probably going to start KJ Adams at the four, mm-hmm. who even played like some small ball five for them last year. He's 6'7". I think he's like 240. He's huge. He's a huge four athletic. Playing right next to – big and athletic playing next to Hunter Dickinson. It'll be interesting to see. I don't necessarily know if Brad's going to – you know, go all out to play the best lineup to win in an exhibition game. But it'd be interesting to see if we see the same starters on Sunday against a much more athletic, bigger four, and obviously just an overall more athletic, more physical lineup. But I think it can work. I think that's probably going to be a lineup we're going to see a lot around Rodgers, because I think you need to do that. And even that, the other thing from Friday night too was, I barely got to see any of Ty Rodgers play point guard. I mean, he had the ball in his hands a little bit early. I mean, he didn't play a whole lot. No one really played a whole lot.
Yeah.
But he had the one pick and pop with Coleman was great. Other than that, they started the game running a lot through Damask and Goody on the wings and trying to get them open shots. No real pick and rolls run through Ty Rodgers.
I thought it was interesting.
Didn't really get to see anything run through him. A few things, but coming out of that, I wanted to see how he looked at point guard, and I feel like I can't draw a fair conclusion because we didn't see it.
Yes. No, I fully agree with that. I was a little surprised that there wasn't as much ball screen action with Ty, or even some booty ball. Like, you're playing a smaller team in Ottawa and a chance to get him a good matchup and try to post him kind of in the middle of the lane and see if they'll cheat and kick to a shooter or just have him back this guy down and go to the rim. I think that it's twofold, right? Like, number one, it still leaves you a lot of questions about Ty and running the team and what that's going to look like. I am encouraged by the fact that you have some other guys you can run offense through. Like, I liked that they were running some ball screen stuff through Shannon on the wing. Now, it obviously worked, and the jury's out maybe on the big picture of that, because Shannon could get to the rim whenever he wanted on Friday night, because just athletically Ottawa couldn't – they didn't have rim protection. They didn't have anybody to cut him off. And while we heard about the mid-range game, I don't necessarily fault Terrence for not showing it on Friday night, because nobody was going to stop him at the rim. I thought that Damask as well was a guy they put in some ball screens, allowed him to use his playmaking. You mentioned it earlier, for him to have six assists. I mean, his final line is 8 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. That's a great line. I think he's an awesome passer. He's an awesome cutter. I loved how much off-ball movement he had. There's that pick, and I tweeted about it, but there's that pick and pop to Coleman. And if Coleman doesn't take that shot, I'm glad he did. He caught it in rhythm. He wasn't too deep out. He buries the three. Damask, as soon as Rodgers is throwing that pass, because if he doesn't throw it, you want to leave the lane open, because then, you know, Coleman's at the top of the key and the lane is just completely open for Ty to go make a play. As soon as he throws it back to Coleman, Damask is cutting down the lane and he's open. If Coleman wanted to hit him on that cut, he could have. Obviously, that's a field play that Damask made, hit Damask, he's at the rim, that's a layup. Illinois didn't have near enough off-ball movement, just kind of high IQ feel-out plays that I think he's going to make this year that they sorely lacked last year. But beyond that, it was a situation where Ty didn't have a lot of opportunities to do that. So like I said, it shows me this offense can move the ball and have some other guys create. And I think another note to make is one of the most consistent aspects, I know we're going to be done with the show and I'll probably talk more about this tomorrow, but Coleman was operating a lot in the high post. They got the ball into Coleman at the high post and like ran some handoff action through him and did a lot of that stuff. I think that Coleman's still going to be a big playmaker for Illinois, even though maybe not as much of, you know, the heavy lifting as last year. Damask is going to be relied on to be a secondary guy. We'll see what it looks like with Ty, and I'll be interested to see, you know, him being matched up against Juwan Harris in Kansas coming up this weekend, what that ultimately looks like.
Yeah, the one quick last thing before we get out of here, the two freshmen looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
Hansberry double-double in like 16 minutes.
Yeah.
And Dre Gibbs-Lawhorn really got it going late there. I know obviously you're up 50 at that point, and there might even be some end-of-bench guys for Ottawa in the game by that point. But at the same time, both those guys looked really good. And that was Hansberry especially. Like, even if he doesn't play a lot this year, I am pumped that that guy is going to be a part of this program, hopefully. I never say fully in this day and age, but hopefully 4 years of him at Illinois, I just a dog. I mean, that guy was battling some really awesome offensive rebounds, hustle plays, and Dre Gibbs Lawhorn is athletic and fun. He can be pretty fun offensively.
He is a highlight reel type of